Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Zach, it occurred to me that 8 years ago is when you and I met for the very first time. And during that meeting, you dropped a movie quote from the movie The Wraith. Up until that moment, no one I had spoken to had ever mentioned The Wraith in passing conversation. So the second that you mentioned it, I knew there was something more going on here.
Yeah, it was something to do with, you know, Packard better be nice, otherwise he's not going to get the burgers the way he likes them with the special sauce or something to that effect.
I think that's what it was. Movie quotes literally brought us together.
They sure did.
We are extremely excited to announce that right now, exclusively for our listeners, If You Know You Know Quotees is offering 15% off your first purchase of any movie quote tees you want. If you go right now to iykyktees.com and enter our code, which is LATEFEEDEAL15, you will get 15% off your purchase.
If you know me, you know that I'm really particular, A, about my t-shirt sizes, and B, the way the t-shirt looks and feels. These shirts check all the boxes.
So there you go, folks. Head on over to iykyktees.com, use our code LATEFEEDEAL15 for 15% off, and you know the quotes. Now you can wear them.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
Congrats! You found $2 Late Fee, the best 80s movies podcast in the world.
We revisit our favorite 80s movies.
Sometimes 90s.
And soundtracks from our youth. And then we interview our favorite people who helped make them. All in the spirit of nostalgic positivity.
Thanks for listening.
At first, all Loudon Swain could think of was getting in shape. But since he met the girl of his dreams, all he can think of is her shape.
You're not from around here, are you?
What, are you kidding me? Trenton, New Jersey.
She doesn't have any transportation or any place to stay or anything, and I was wondering, maybe we could ask her to stay with us.
Good night, guys.
And now that she's moved into his house...
Who's that girl?
He can't keep his mind on what he's doing.
The girl of my dreams lives under my own roof. I see her every day, but she thinks I'm a kid. Immature, a dumb jock. All of which is more or less true.
Wanna know what turns me on? Hands. Really big hands. The kind that when they hold you, you really feel held.
And he certainly can't do what's on his mind. But give the guy a break. When you're in love, you can do some seriously crazy things. This is the new film from the executive producers of Flashdance, Vision Quest.
Sing it, Dustin, sing it.
Swing low, sweet Vision Quest. Coming forth to Loudon Swain home.
That's my least favorite song on the soundtrack. I just want to get that out of the way.
I was going to say, you know, when we talk about the soundtrack, they left a couple songs from the movie off of the physical soundtrack. And that one was one that definitely needed to be left off.
I know. I agree. I mean, I thought, you know, when it first plays, you're like, well, what a weird version of Swing Low. Sweet
especially
Chariot.
Because it's like in a bar setting and Madonna's singing it.
Madonna's in it. You know, Madonna has so many songs in this movie that are memorable. And this is not one of them. I agree. So we've covered the soundtrack. I guess we can move on. Welcome, audience. Hello, everybody. Hey, just a quick shout out. If you're listening from Canada, we love you more today. Why? No reason. Is this the weirdest way to start an episode? Yeah, probably.
Sure, why not? But, you know, probably. Spokane, where this movie takes place, Vision Quest, is pretty darn close to Canada. So there you go.
Oh, hey, you know, by the way, our very first fan of the show is from Spokane. Remember Jamin?
Oh, my
remember
gosh.
Remember our buddy? We know, I haven't heard much from him these days, but again, I'm not really on the social media. How you doing out there, Jamin? That's really who we should be shouting out. Forget the Canadians. I just like to give shout outs to international listeners, but
wow, that's taking it back all the way to when we were recording at your house.
Right. We were in the house. He sent us all these postcards. I've got them. Postcards. I mean, yeah.
Beer glasses, stickers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. How
he
are
still
you?
Still likes our stuff? Yeah. How are you?
Are you okay out there? Hey, if you're listening, you know, give us a shout because we're thinking about you, especially covering Spokane's own Vision Quest.
Well, we talked about Vision Quest. We probably recorded in your house that top five sports soundtrack episode in our first season. It was the lead up to our interview with Vince DiCola. And we ran down our favorite soundtracks from sports centric films. And I believe Vision Quest was your number one.
Wow.
Right?
I mean, it's very interesting when you say that, because right. That would have been, that was pre-pandemic. I mean, if that was first season, then you're absolutely right. I mean, we were talking 5 years ago, pretty much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I believe in that episode, we had made mention or reference to the fact that we would cover many of the movies we talked about. We would cover them in their own specific episode down the road. But this was more just like a tease or like discussion about, because we covered American Flyers, we covered Rocky IV, et cetera, et cetera.
We did.
You know, Rad, I believe, is in there as well. So anyways.
We did. I don't know specifically what we mentioned in that episode, but I feel like, you know, usually sometimes I'll go back and be like, oh, what did we talk about?
I just remember you singing Only the Young.
Only the Young. Okay.
And then kind of dismissing She's on the Zoom. But we're going to get to that
in a little bit. Okay. Well, not much has changed. Spoiler alert.
I have some strong thoughts about said song in said scene that it's used in. So, right said Fred.
Yeah, right said Fred. Don't like that song either.
Vision Quest. Is it safe to say that Vision Quest, as popular as it is still considered somewhat of a cult movie?
You know, I would agree. I think, you know, well, I guess first things first, right? So Vision Quest, 1985, it is a wrestling movie.
That's what we're talking about today.
It is a wrestling movie. It is, I just want to give a quick synopsis.
Please.
For anyone who may not be familiar with it, but it's about an 18-year-old wrestler named Loudon Swain, played by Matthew Modine. He has recently turned 18, and he has decided that 18 is the year he's going to make his mark. So what's he going to do? He's already the top wrestler in his school at the 190 weight class, but he decides he's going to really risk it all and drop all the weight to wrestle at 168 to take on the top wrestler in the state, possibly the top wrestler at that weight class in the country. Everyone thinks he's crazy. And, you know, in the meantime, a drifter comes through. And she's a little older, You know, he's a virile young man. He's into her. She's staying at his house.
She's 21.
Yeah.
He's 18.
She's 21. He's 18. Can you imagine? And what happens? He's on this goal. He's got this goal. He's got this vision quest, and everyone around him, thinks he's crazy. And it's a kind of a coming of age story. But what I wanted to say, because you were saying, is it a cult movie? Is that what I was kind of thinking about revisiting this? This is sort of my thesis statement, I guess, is that sort of if the Iron Claw has taught me anything, it's that I personally think it's hard to measure wrestling's popularity for myself. Now, you as the host of Territory Marks, you might feel differently. And certainly, you and I just watched WrestleMania 40 this past weekend. You were very gracious. You had us over. It was an amazing experience. And we know that some things in modern day WWE have changed, right? From ownership to storylines. There's some exciting things happening. Right. We also know that it broke all the records for the gate attendance. Allegedly, I don't know if they're reporting, I don't know why they'd falsify those numbers, but
right.
We know that it was 78% more than it was the year prior.
Yeah.
145,000 plus in attendance. And then, there's the whole convention that was added on. They did great with sales. The more people watched it both days. You know, you could argue that inflation, prices, things are different. So, of course, there's going to be more money spent. But anyway, all that to say, it's sometimes hard, I think, to take wrestling and create a story that appeals to everyone, not just wrestling fans.
Yeah.
Would you say that's accurate?
I would say it's absolutely accurate.
So when you look at 1985, Vision Quest is a wrestling movie, but it's not, at its core, it's not really what it's about. I mean, that's sort of like the dressing around the human story, right? It's a wrestler who is fixated on achieving this goal of hitting that weight so he can wrestle the best of the best. But he's also dealing with, sexual awakening and what does it mean? Like, what does it mean to be alive in the world? Do I have any interests beyond wrestling? Am I, so short-sighted that I've limited my goals? Am I going to throw away my goals for a woman? All these things. These are all real, relatable topics. Anyway, I've been saying a lot here, so I'm going to pull the plug.
No, I love it because I love how passionate you are about this movie, and I know it holds a special place in your heart.
Well, it does, but it's also like coming at it, a 1985 film, revisiting it in 2024, right? It's the old nostalgia test. It's like, do I love this because of its nostalgia, or is there something here as a movie that really still holds up, that still stands out? Been a lot of talk about remakes over the years, who's going to be involved in it. We know that wrestlers, current day wrestlers, will say that Vision Quest is their favorite movie. Who is it that has co-opted Lunatic Fringe?
Oh, Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle, yeah. Of course, yes.
Olympic gold medalist and WWE professional wrestler, and has gone on record to say that this movie was his favorite wrestling movie or favorite movie. I know Dana White recently wrote something or said something on a podcast, and Matthew Modine chimed in and praised him for saying such colorful, flowery things about Vision Quest.
And who is David White? Because I have no idea.
Dana White. Sorry, Dana,
oh, Dana White,
White. The head of...
The UFC.
UFC and, guy, yeah.
Yes, okay.
But I think there's a line in this movie, and I'm going to give, if you know, you know, a quick shout out. If you know, you know, Tease, which we have dropped in the beginning of this episode, obviously, the little commercial. And obviously, if you go on our Instagram, you see a couple pictures of Dustin and I sporting If You Know You Know tees. There's a line in here by Elmo. He is, so, you know, really quickly, Loudon has a night job at a hotel. He's like a busboy or whatever. And his kind of mentor at the hotel, Elmo, played by J.C. Quinn. Love that guy, by the way. He popped up in another Matthew Modine movie, Gross Anatomy, I guess, a few years later, mm-hmm. with Daphne Zuniga, who's also in this movie. But he says, he's talking about, it's towards the end of the movie, and he's getting ready to go watch Loudon compete against Shoot, right? The best wrestler in the country. And he says, quote, "It ain't the 6 minutes, it's what happens in those minutes."
Yeah, who is it?
Yeah, Elmo, it's Loudon.
Hey, come on in, kid, I'm getting dressed.
I was at the hotel, they told me you took the night off. Thought you were sick or something.
Of course I took the night off, dummy. Is this the night you wrestle Shoot?
You took the night off for that?
Yeah. Shave, got a haircut and everything.
You never took a night off to see me wrestle before. I'm gonna dock you for that.
Hey, kid, money ain't everything.
You know, it's not that big a deal, Elmo. I mean, it's 6 lousy minutes on the mat, if that.
Ever hear of Pele?
Yeah, he's a soccer player.
Very famous soccer player. There's a room here one day. I'm watching a Mexican channel on TV. I don't know nothing about Pele. I'm watching what this guy can do with a ball on his feet. Next thing I know, he jumps up in the air and flips into a somersault and kicks the ball in upside down and backwards. The goddamn goalie never knew what the fuck hit him. And Pele gets excited and he rips off his jersey and starts running around the stadium, waving it around over his head. Everybody's screaming in Spanish. I'm here sitting alone in my room. I start crying. Yeah, that's right, I start crying. Because another human being, a species which I happen to belong to, would kick a ball, lift himself. The rest of us sat as human beings up to a better place to be, if only for a minute. Let me tell you, kid, it was pretty goddamn glorious. It ain't the 6 minutes. It's what happens in that 6 minutes. Anyway, that's why I'm getting dressed up and giving up the night's pay for this function.
And I heard that, and I'm like, that's a quote you should have on a t-shirt from If You Know You Know.
Oh, there you go.
So If You Know You Know Tees is a company we're obviously supporting right now and big fans of, and they make really rad t-shirts with quotes from movies. And I think "It Ain't the 6 minutes, it's what happens in those minutes" would be a great quote on a t-shirt.
Well, Zach, it's so funny you bring that up, because right now, if you go to iykyktees.com, you can get that Vision Quest shirt with the amazing 6 minutes quote. And even better, exclusive to our listeners, if you use the code $2vision, that's $2, and the word vision, capital V, you can get 15% off this shirt.
All of this is to say, in regards to Vision Quest as a movie, is I have to really quickly say I haven't seen this movie since 1985, when it came out. Since then, it was the first time I've watched it since then. So 2024 eyes, very similar to Last Dragon. I think it holds up in spades. It really does. I think the overall message is super, super strong. And I love that it's like this little kind of catcher in the rye, coming of age story. He narrates from the beginning and he narrates the end of the movie. Wrestling is kind of the just the afterthought. It's really the overall message of what's going on his personal journey. The use of music is phenomenal throughout this thing. And in some instances it's not, but we can talk about that too. But I was blown away. I was like, I think a couple things that stood out to me were, first of all, Cooch. This is our second movie in a row where we're talking about Michael Scheffling, obviously with 16 Candles last month. And in this, it's the next movie pretty much in his filmography that he did, where he's playing Cooch, claims that he's Native American, but he's really not, but comes from a broken home. But he's the perfect supporting sidekick in this. He's a great sidekick. And I love that character. I'm not a huge Matthew Modine fan. I don't think I ever really was. So watching this, I'm like, I see why I'm not a huge Matthew Modine fan. I don't dislike the guy. You know, I liked him in this and Gross Anatomy and Biloxi Blues. The plane movie he did.
He plays a Joker in
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket, of course.
Yeah.
But the plane movie. You
know what I'm talking about, that plane movie.
What the fuck's going on? Yes, I'm forgetting every movie that Matthew Modine's in.
Why am I blanking on that movie? Memphis Belle. Sorry, it's Memphis Belle.
Memphis Belle.
Yeah, which I love that movie too. And again, I liked him a lot in Full Metal Jacket as well, but he's not one of those guys where I'm like, oh, that's a Matthew Modine movie? I'm going to go see that. It's more like, who else is in it? What's the premise? You know, right. There are movies that I'll jump at a Kurt Russell movie if I see that he's coming out with something, but not a Matthew Modine movie. That being said, I thought he was great in this. The Linda Fiorentino's first movie she ever did, right? And Ronnie Cox playing the dad. Like there's just a laundry list of positive things you can say about this movie.
Yeah, it's been very fun. I think most notably recently to see a resurgence of Matthew Modine in Stranger Things as Papa. And I think, those of us that love the 80s, you know, he's very representative of that time. So, you know, he's kind of a character in Stranger Things where you don't know how to feel about him. You know, you're like, oh, he's kind of a mean bastard, but he does love Eleven, but does he? And, at the end of the day, she's his favorite, but obviously a really messed up relationship. Vision Quest, based on a young adult novel of the same name from 1979 by a guy named Terry Davis, who also co-wrote the screenplay. I did not read the book. I know that it got a lot of positive kind of reviews. It was nominated for some awards in 1980. There are, a lot of key differences with the book, but what I kind of love across all, I guess, foundational feelings about the story is that there really isn't a lot in terms of the antagonist. And what I mean by that is like, there aren't really like other 80s movies. There aren't really bullies.
No.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's some things that happen in this movie, but they're all kind of a result of Loudon's blinded obsession.
Yes.
To kind of focus on himself versus the team. But there are all these moments, like you mentioned Cooch, where like the film starts off and you don't know his relationship with Cooch. So it almost seems like Cooch is a bad guy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You know, we were kind of introduced to him, like really introduced to what's going on when Matthew Modine is like jogging at night from the hotel and the lights come on Cooch's motorcycle and you're like, oh no. Like, is he going to get, like, he's, you know, is this going to be a Karate Kid into the night?
Yeah.
You know, where Loudon's racing down from the motorcycle. And he's just pretty much like, Cooch is like, hey, man, today at practice, I noticed you, declared that you're not wrestling at 190. You're now going to wrestle 178. 178 is my class. What's up? You know, and he's like, I don't know. Just, thinking about, you know, some other things. Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to be in that wrestling class very long. And Kucha's like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm wrestling. Yeah. Shoot. You know? So it's, you're kind of like, all right, Matthew Modine's one of these guys who just kind of thinks he's going to do something, decides to do something, very strong-willed, but doesn't really communicate very well.
No, no. To everybody. To the point where his teammates are like, you're not being a team player. We're a part of a team. And he even says, wrestling's not a team sport.
Got news for you. Yeah. It's not a team sport.
I mean, it's an interesting statement to make because his teammates are kind of perceived as an antagonist at one point. Right? Otto, I believe his name is.
Yep. Got news for you, Otto.
But is Otto really the bad guy in this sense? Or is he just more annoyed that Loudon is being selfish?
Well, no, I think I agree with Otto, to be honest, because you can look at it like a couple different ways. But when you break it down, right, if Loudon is wrestling at 190, he's already established himself there. He's a very good wrestler at 190. We know that. And he became very good very quickly. He kind of took to wrestling very easily. We kind of learned that from the coach. But if Loudon is already kind of guaranteeing those points at 190 and then decides, I'm going to do this harder thing, which is so unrealistic, and I'm also going to take your spot, Otto,
right,
at 168, by the way, you know, it's kind of a double FU because you're now potentially taking away those gimme points from your team at that weight class, and you're taking away, you know, somebody's ability to wrestle. Now, you know, you always want the best guy at the best weight class, or, you know, you want it to make sense for the lineup. But these are the politics of being a teammate.
But what determines their final? What changes it, though, for Otto? What is that moment in the movie where Otto goes, okay, fine, you can do this now? What right. is that moment?
Well, it's the moment that changes it, I think, for everybody, because we've gotten to a point where, you know, I don't think we mentioned this, but so in order to lose that weight, in order to get to 168, down from 190, right, in order to lose 22 pounds in essentially rapid fashion, Matthew Modine is on, Loudon is on a 600 calorie a day diet. So, you know, he's not taking care of himself and he's working out constantly. He's doing push-ups whenever he can. He's got that. Did you have that the wrist thing?
I had the wrist, the little hand strengthening thing. It's with the spring in it. And I had that back in the day. I did not wear the insulated jumpsuit that he wears.
Right. Right. You know, you're going to get rid of that sweat weight. You're going to lose it however you can. But so, there are health detriments
to
this kind of thing. And Loudon has started having nosebleeds. He's been DQ'd from a match. The coach is just like, this is not happening. You're not wrestling. You're not wrestling at 168. You're going to go back to your weight. You're going to get healthy. This is enough. And at that moment that we're talking about, where they're doing the practice, they're doing the belly crawl. I don't know what you call that. The snake. I don't know what.
I know. I'm like, is this some weird like duck duck goose kind? Well, no, that's later in the movie.
That's later. The duck duck goose. I think it used to be called like an Indian run or something, or like.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's not now. But they're doing the kind of the belly crawl thing. He says, "Got news for you, Otto. Wrestling isn't a team sport." And then he goes to the wall, takes out the pegs, goes to the wall, and we've seen several wrestlers, including Otto, unsuccessfully climb this wall. Pegboard wall. And Loudon takes it to the top. He, you know, people talking, saying that you're leaving, takes it to the top. And at that point, by the time he gets down, everyone is like, all right, this guy's insane.
Yeah, because he climbs it pretty quickly and then comes down pretty quickly.
Climbs it quickly, comes down quickly.
Have you ever done that, by the way?
I've never attempted the peg wall. We have one at my gym currently. There's a woman that does it. I've nicknamed her Vision Quest.
Okay.
She does not know that I've nicknamed her Vision Quest, but it's very inspiring because she just pegs around the whole thing. You know, I don't know the benefit of that exactly. Like, it does seem like one of those mental challenges.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's physically draining too, but I just mean, like, there are other things that you'd probably want to do in the gym before the peg wall.
Right.
So I've not, but have you done it?
I remember in high school trying to do it and being super hard. I was scrawny in high school. I had like no muscle whatsoever. So I didn't actually start working out until I was 18.
So, oh, wow. So this is, you're kind of due, I think. You're due to, now that you have some muscles, to go to the peg wall.
I'm game to try it now. I think it's, I'm up for the challenge.
Yeah. All right.
I don't think I could cruise up that thing and down like Loudon does.
All right. Listeners, if you have a peg wall and that Zach can climb, let us know and we'll make a day of it. And if you're in the LA area, that's probably better too. But if you can fly a peg wall out to us, I feel like this will be a good challenge.
I'm curious if our good buddy Bob Lindenmayer, his son Flash, does the peg wall, because, you know, he was very curious how much I benched. If I could do the peg wall, I'm sure Flash can do the peg wall.
Right. So maybe some backstory here is that you visited Bob Lindenmayer up in Seattle. Bob Lindenmayer, of course, the director, producer of the upcoming Making Megaforce movie.
Right.
Coming out sometime this year. And we were involved in that. FYI, but you visited Bob and you're saying you met his son, who do you think that his son Flash, you're saying, could probably do the peg wall?
I believe Flash could do the peg wall.
Yeah. Okay.
And if Flash can do it, I think I can do it.
Okay. Did you guys arm wrestle, or were there any feats of strength that happened?
There was never any like real comment about working out. I was curious. He had just come home from the gym, so we were having a discussion about the gym. And
right, you took out the forceps. You were kind of measuring his his biceps, I'm sure.
I think he was like, this dude's cool. I'm curious, you know. So I get a text from his dad later, and he's like, Flash wants to know how much you bench. And I'm like, really? Okay, cool, sure. 220.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's like, Flash can do that too. And I'm like, of course he can.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a relationship that we need to revisit, build upon. You guys always, how much you benched today? Like,
I will say really quickly, just because it's so fresh. You know, obviously we record these episodes in advance, so this is in May, but we recorded it in April. I just did an interview with Greg Gagne, who is a former professional wrestler for the AWA. His father's Vern Gagne, who started the AWA. This is going to be an upcoming interview on Territory Marks in a couple weeks, actually. Awesome interview, but I wanted to know how he got involved with wrestling, and he was saying how his weight class, he was like 168 in high school, and he wanted to come down to like 135.
Oh, you know? Why?
And he was playing basketball at the time.
What?
And this coach is like, no, you're not doing that. It's not safe. It's not safe, you know? So Loudon wants to come down, what, 30 pounds close to? Well, 22
pounds, I guess.
22, yeah. That's a lot of freaking weight in a short period of time. Not to mention what Greg does later on when he does become a professional wrestler and he trains. It's insane, the training that they do.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tease that right now. Y'all have to listen to that interview because it's going to blow your mind, some of the stuff he did back in the day. 6 hours a day for like 6 months in a barn.
In a barn. With
a thousand squats in an hour. 1,000 squats in an hour.
1,000 squats in an hour?
Every single day.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of how you get to that point where your muscles start to eat themselves or your kidneys shut down. Or
I mean, he'll tell you about it. It's insane.
Did his kidney shut down?
No, okay. No, but you know, it's that's just a taste of what he was having to do in this barn in the wintertime. So anyways, I think bookending that with, I just interviewed him and then watching Vision Quest, and I was like, man, these guys are putting themselves through hell. Wrestling is intense. It is a really intense sport, and it doesn't get a lot of notoriety, I think, because when people think of wrestling, they think of professional wrestling, which you see on television with the WWE. They don't think of like collegiate wrestling, which is what this is. But it starts here. This is the foundation, right? And Loudon is good. Like, Matthew Modine is really good. This is a really cool sports movie. But it's so different. You know, you mentioned there's no real antagonist. Shoot is not a bad guy. He's just the top guy in his class. So
he's more of a goal, you know.
He's the goal.
Shoot isn't even aware of Matthew Modine's existence, of Loudon's existence, you know, until he sort of announces himself, like, hey, you know, Loudon Swain, Thompson High. Oh, you're gonna make the weight, you know? As an aside, I don't really believe that these guys are in the same weight class.
No.
Anyway.
Shoot is not 168.
I mean, Shoot is a literal monster. Like,
he looks like Dolph Lundgren.
Shoot's body is at least, you know, 200 pounds. Like, he is just an absolute monster. So you're looking at these guys, they don't really match up. I mean, I guess that's part of the thing. I also understand that there were some, you know, reshoots that were done. And I know that the actor that played Brian Shute,
Frank Jasper.
I know that Frank was not, you know, had gained a certain amount of weight for the reshoots. He was like, oh, you got to lose it. And I, you know, it's just clear to me that this guy, as a physical specimen, I mean, he really is just, you stand him next to Matthew Modine, it's no contest. You know what I mean? It's just not a contest. You have a giant beast of a man. And you know, Matthew Modine is lean, but he looks
168.
Right. By the end of it, he does look 168. But yeah, at one point in the movie, they're kind of mentioning, it's like, he's at 178 and he's got like 2 weeks or something before the match to make that weight. He's got to lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. And you're like, holy hell, man. I mean, you're already running everywhere and literally not eating food.
Yeah, when there's a funny scene when Elmo tries to make him a burger, and he's like picking it apart like a bird, basically.
You know? He's like, just eat the
it's
burger.
Really funny scene.
Just eat the burger.
I love their relationship, by the way. I like this movie is more of a interpersonal relationship, like one-on-one relationships. It's more like vignettes of how he interacts with certain people, you know, from his coach to Carla, to his dad, to
his,
you know,
English teacher,
yeah, right. Like it's like one-offs. They're never all. They're never really combined, right? Except for his dad and Carla a couple times in the movie. But it's really like him with one person most of the time throughout this.
You're right, and for the most part, I mean, everyone's just really supportive. It's almost like internal struggles by the time, you know, the movie kind of reaches the final act.
Yeah, but which is actually really cool. Like, you don't often see that.
You don't.
Especially in a sports movie. Usually in a sports movie, it is like a team effort, right? Upcoming guest, Rafael Sabarge, who will be joining us next week. You know, he has a very small role as Schmoozler, and he is the, he's Otto's buddy. He's kind of like the Weasley sidekick, but he's not a bad guy either.
He doesn't Ratso Rizzo of the wrestling team or something.
Pretty much. Yeah, it is interesting. There's a lot of really great character actors in this. Did you know that Cooch's dad is played by James Gammon? I think most people would remember him from Major League, right?
Let's win the whole damn, yeah. Like,
he doesn't, I mean, what his character in this is, pure evil.
Too old to go hiding into behind lockers or I don't know. Remember, right. No lines from Major League, but yeah. It's amazing. And your point about Elmo, like that speech that he gives, I was like, this would be an amazing audition monologue about 6 minutes.
Great monologue.
Yeah, Pele, tears, it's all really amazing stuff. And you have all this like vulnerability, you know, from him, but it's such a beautiful friendship. Like the fact that he's taking off from work and Loudon is like, why are you taking off work? He's like, because you're wrestling tonight, idiot. Like,
yeah, I know. I love that.
You know, you're my friend. Like you've been talking about this for, you know, months now. Elmo was one of the first people to know that Loudon was even going to do this. And it's so sweet. It really is just so touching. It's like, yeah, it's a really beautiful scene. And he's, you know, it's kind of like those other movies where everybody kind of relates to these mundane lives that they have, or, you know, they fall into the routines, and it's just like about those beautiful moments of magic,
yeah,
that bring us out of that. And,
what do you think about that being said, what do you think about the scene he has with his grandfather played by, Roberts Blossom, who I think a lot of people will probably remember from Home Alone, right? He was the
Shovel Man.
Right. And then, but he was in Escape from Alcatraz. He's great in that. And he's in a really creepy ass film called Deranged, where he basically plays Ed Gein. It was before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I believe. It's terrifying. Anyways, that's an aside. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about that scene he has with his grandfather?
Yeah. I kind of love him, in Doc Hollywood. He's the judge.
Of course
slash,
you do.
You know, yeah.
Of course
I built
do.
That fence myself.
he's great. Roberts Blossom. Great name, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, another great scene. You know, the whole thing kind of leading up to that is that it sort of gives Loudon and Carla, Linda Fiorentino, a device with which to be alone, right? Together.
Yes.
Yeah. Outside.
Get to know each other.
Yeah, it's kind of this, you know, weird moment. I understand it's kind of big in the book or something, but, you know, she's kind of like, I love old people. She says something like, I love old people. Let me go with you to visit your grandfather. I'm like, I love old people. All right. great.
I think you had a t-shirt on that said, I heart old people.
I heart old people. If you know, you know, I heart old people. that's another shirt that we should.
You guys, like these t-shirts will make themselves.
I love old people, but this is kind of a weird digression. But I felt like the way that launches us to this road trip was confusing in the sense that it's not like how far away does Grandpa live?
Because I'm like, I thought his dad said he lives in the woods, right?
And they're like camping out, like it's so far that they've been driving an entire day that they first have to you know, mark a tent. They have to pitch a tent. They have to, you know, set up camp.
Right. I'm like, is this the scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure where he's on a road trip or something?
Right. Oh my God. Before then having to go to Grandpa. But
right.
But anyway, that was just a quick digression. But I think. You know, yeah, Grandpa, that scene is great. You know, it's another great scene. It's another, it's not a one-on-one, but it certainly could be.
Yeah. Yeah. In a weird way it kind of is. Cause I mean, like Carl is there, but she's not there. I feel like her character, Matthew Modine has a teenage crush on her. It's not serious. Let's be honest. It is the thing you have when you're in high school, you have a crush on someone, but it's not going to go anywhere. It's just a motivation. It's actually something that kind of creates a little bit of tension. Is this going to be the thing that holds him back from achieving his dream?
Right.
His dream of beating this guy, because it does distract him. It does keep him held back for a little bit. But it's not, you know, the cover art for this poster for this movie is a little annoying because it's like him hugging her on the poster and it looks like a romance movie, but it's really not. Like it really should be him. There's a scene of, I've seen it somewhere. It might've been a fan made poster, but it's when he's jumping rope and he's like looking up at the ceiling. That's the poster.
He's
right
lunatic
there.
Fringe. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the poster.
Right. That's the poster. I mean, the problem is what you're kind of talking about is that kind of marketing tie-in of like the Madonna song, the Crazy for You, the, you know, this is a romantic coming of age thing. But it really, I agree, it's not. It's not. And I guess we probably should mention too that her character, this character of Carla, the kind of the way that she's introduced is, you know, this is absolutely makes no sense. And if you try and think about this, you're going to be like,
you're mentioning this. Yeah.
This makes no sense.
Go ahead. But try to describe it.
But she, well, for starters, we learn that she's coming from New Jersey en route to art school in San Francisco, passing through Spokane, Washington. Now that, what the hell is she doing in Spokane? You look at a map, there's no clear path that involves going to way north to Spokane before going to San Francisco. So, but somehow she has ended up in Spokane. She's buying a car. She buys a lemon. She gets, you know, ripped off by the local, you know, Thompson. I was at the Thompson High car dealership, but you know, the local car dealer,
right.
Loudon's dad, played by the amazing Ronnie Cox.
So good.
Shout out to Ronnie Cox. We love him. Beverly Hills Cop, RoboCop, any movie with cop in it. Deliverance, exactly. But Ronnie Cox is a mechanic. He has, you know, been like, how dare you sell a lemon to this 21-year-old passing through on her way to art school in San Francisco? And, you know, he's like punched that guy. He loses his job. We never revisit that. That's never talked about ever again. Yeah. She, you know, she's like, well, how am I going to get to art school? How am I going to San Francisco? I don't have a car. And he's like, well, I'll fix your car. Don't worry about that. I don't know where he's going to be fixing it because he's been fired. So he's going to be fixing it.
Right.
In,
yeah.
You know,
he gets fired
in the basement or something. But, but that's where Loudon lives. So he's not fixing it there. But anyway, somehow dad is getting the car fixed. He's like, in the meantime, why don't you just stay with us? She's like, I can't do that. He's like, no. Hospitality. This is our this is, you know, how we are around here. We're real nice. Real hospitable. She's like, okay. And then the next scene, she's just walking around in her underwear, stealing their yogurt.
I know. And so, as an 18-year-old, I don't blame Loudon.
No. You're like, what? How did we go from like, no, I could not impose to like, I'm walking around in my underwear. You mind if I take your last yogurt? And he's like, yeah, I don't eat any food. Sure.
There were a few moments like that where I'm like, head scratching moments. Where I'm like, this movie's not perfect by any means. Right. Doesn't take away from the love. It does not at all. But then I was like, okay, I know that's not the director's fault. Always. It could be the writers too, you know? But I was just curious. I'm like, who, Harold Becker, why does that name sound familiar to me? And what other movies has he made? And then I looked up his filmography and I'm like, most of his movies are kind of like, that's pretty good, but not that great, to be honest with you, in my opinion. I don't think Malice is a great movie. I don't think Mercury Rising is a good movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think Sea of Love is a good movie. I don't think Domestic Disturbance is a good movie. I'm like, ding, 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 rattling off these names.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
Ooh, Vision Quest is definitely his best movie, in my opinion. But all of his movies kind of have this thing where you're like, oh, it could have been good if... Fortunately, these scenes like that, the scene where Matthew Modine meets the guy in his hotel room and teaches him Tai Chi, but then he tries to make a move on Loudon, that made me really uncomfortable because it's like such a cliche thing where it's like, oh, the guy's doing something kind of, you know, mystical, so he's got to be gay or, you know, he's got to be this, you know, pervert.
Right.
I didn't like that scene in the movie. I think it was just made for comedy. Made me uncomfortable, though. There's a couple scenes like that don't work for me, but overall, I still love this movie.
Yeah, I think, I think you're right. I mean, I think I think the fact that there isn't anything crazy that happens, there's nothing involving the dad and some like government agents or like, you know, there's nothing, no one gets arrested for no reason, like nothing, you know, the conflict is all kind of internal struggle.
Yes.
And, you know, and then what am I going to do about Carla?
He never even has an he never has a confrontation with his dad in regards to his the mom left the dad for another man. There's a whole other backstory to that. But and Loudon gets upset with his dad in one scene, right. But it doesn't really go anywhere. It never goes above a five. You know, nothing ever escalates.
Yeah, it's true. It's basically there just for exposition. Where's mom? Oh, that's it.
Right.
You know, however Loudon feels about that, whatever he's dealing with, could certainly inform how he relates with, you know, relates to women or, you know, his, but he's also, yeah, he's just like an 18-year-old who works out all the time.
Wants to be a gynecologist.
Yeah. In space.
yeah. I mean, why not?
Which is so funny. And then a quick note just about the DP of this, Owen Roizman, who very established DP, which is why I'm bringing this up. Network, 3 Days of the Condor, The Exorcist, Tootsie, Taps.
Which really, Harold Becker also directed.
Exactly, which Harold Becker also directed. The writer of this with Terry Davis, who wrote the novel, you know, also wrote Taps. I think, you know, visually, there are a lot of really strong, moody choices with this. Everything totally from like every time you see Loudon, he's running from right to left. And every time, you know, he, you know, from where he's the final shoot match and he's kind of off in that side gym, which I think is such an interesting choice from a directing perspective. I really like it a lot, you know, where it's like he's kind of in his own get ready space.
Right.
But again, he's totally separate from the team. He's not cheering on any of his teammates. You know, he's not a team player. He's not a team player. Let's just get this out of the way. Loudon doesn't give a crap about the team. He probably has no idea, you know, because it's not about that. It's never like, oh, is the team going to win? It has nothing to do with it. It's like, am I going to win? But everyone's totally on board with him. They're supporting him. But he's in this dark, moody, you know, practice gym. Jumping rope, the iconic thing that you're talking about should be the poster. I mean, that's all lit very intentionally, very totally. Moody, and very well used in terms of the music also.
Right, right. Yeah, no, and let's get into that soundtrack. But really quick before we do, I just also want to mention, you know, Loudon is not a selfish dick because he cares about Cooch. He really does. They have a very heartfelt scene after he witnesses Cooch get beat up by his dad. And I just wanted to throw that in there just to clarify that he does have a heart. He does care. But, you know, he just doesn't care about his team.
No, he does. He does. And I think, you know, with these one-on-one things, it is all, he is an empathetic human being, both how we see him, but also, you know, to other people's plights. But it's also like, nothing really goes beyond, you know, him and his goal to wrestle shoot.
Absolutely. Right?
Like it always comes back to that.
Yep.
Like, and people are like, why? I don't really know. You know, Cooch is like, well, you're on a vision quest.
Right.
But that's right. Like, that's not really how Loudon feels about it until, no, you know, maybe the end, he sort of acknowledges it.
Yeah. Maybe, at the end he gets
right?
it.
Maybe Cooch was right.
It's all that blood that spilled out of his nose. So,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Should we talk about the soundtrack?
Yeah.
Because this movie, I think, features certain songs really well, and I love how they reprise the songs, how they bring them back throughout the movie as a reoccurring theme. Lunatic Fringe is the consistent kind of driving song throughout this movie. It opens the movie. It plays over that scene you described when Lunatic Fringe by Red Ryder. plays over that scene that you described before he goes out to fight Russell Shute. Absolutely love that song. What your thoughts on Lunatic Fringe?
Yeah, I think I guess the first thing I should mention is that this is one of my favorite soundtracks. Yeah. I've always found it to be very motivational. When I was in high school and I ran cross country, I ran track, I played basketball, I utilized this soundtrack, you know, in my training. Still do. So it's almost like I can hear that song and just get immediately put into a meditative place, you know? So not only with kind of how I see it in the movie, but also, you know, like just like nostalgia, right? And the 80s through the 90s. But Lunatic Fringe has this great build and build and build and build. And the whole thing really is just a build.
It is. It's a unique song because it doesn't follow the typical pattern.
No. But tension, moodiness, what's going to happen? It's not a song I would ever skip.
No. Are you familiar with the lead singer of Red Rider? Do you know who that is?
Well, I used to know, and now I'm totally
scared. It's Tom Cochran of Life is a Highway.
Life is a Highway. That is right. And I went on this very deep dive maybe last summer about that. And I hate that song. I hate Love is a Highway. I want to throw it into the highway and drive over it with a Mack truck.
I had that cassette when that song came out and the video came out, and I think I bought the cassette.
Yeah. That tracks. I'm sure you own it and probably played it on the way to school this morning.
No. But when Cars came out
Cars?
But it's covered by
Billy Ray Cyrus
band. I forget the name of the band, but I can't believe I'm blanking on them right now.
Yeah, well, it happens. I mean, look, we blank and we own it, right? Like, I totally spaced on Tom Cochran, but I knew that. I knew the answer to that. You'd think I would have been prepared.
That video, too, I was like, I remember that the album was called Mad Mad World, and it's just so cheesy. Rascal Flatts covered it. For the car soundtrack.
Rascal Flatts. That sounds right.
Yeah. I went a little out of order, though, because typically, like, I try to stay a little structured when it comes to the order of the songs and the soundtrack, because that song just comes up first in the movie, but it's not first on the physical soundtrack. And before we get into the physical soundtrack, I just want to say that the songs that are left off the actual soundtrack, but are featured in the movie, I'm okay with them not being in it. It's No More Words by Berlin, which is a very popular song. There's a song by REO Speedwagon and a song by Quarterflash. They're not like standout songs to me. So for me, I'm like, I'm okay with them not being on this 10 song soundtrack.
Yeah.
And then of course, Tangerine Dream, does the score again, Tangerine Dream, mm-hmm. with
always,
another score for
always.
The movie. I would say it's like, it's fine. It's not super amazing. I think it has shades of 3 o'clock High, because I think we talked about that in 3 o'clock High. They kind of went through their old catalog and they're like, oh, this will work.
Right. Risky Business, 3 o'clock High. I just wanted to share the definition from the Oxford Dictionary of what a lunatic fringe is.
Oh, please.
Because it's defined as an extreme or eccentric minority within society or a group. Basically, someone who adopts or supports views that are regarded as extreme or fanatical, which, you know, in this case, we could say that Loudon is a fanatic.
He is.
With his views. But, you know, I can feel it coming. I always kind of thought, like, lyrically, does this make sense? But then you don't really think so hard about the lyrics.
No.
You know?
No. I think of like the visuals. I think this is a perfect song that would be featured on Miami Vice, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was in one episode of Miami Vice in some degree, you know?
Probably was. That definitely sounds right.
Crockett's and Tubbs are making their move. One song, though, if we start at the top of the soundtrack, and this song, again, is reprised throughout the movie. It's used beautifully in the beginning of the movie over the credits. Only the Young by Journey. Oh, baby, this song, I mean, I know you love it. I love it too. You know the backstory about this song, right?
Why don't you share it with everybody?
Well, so this song, it was written by Jonathan Cain, Steve Perry, and Neil Sean. It was originally intended for their 83 album Frontiers, but it was held back. And it was recorded by Scandal in 84. Beautiful version by Scandal, by the way. And then it was featured in Vision Quest, the soundtrack, right? And it finally made it onto a later album. But the background behind this was the first person to ever hear this song was a kid named Kenny Cykluk, of Rocky River, Ohio, who was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. His mother wrote a letter to the band telling them about her son's terminal condition and how big a fan he was of Journey. The band flew to the hospital at the request of Make-A-Wish, and they brought along a Walkman containing the song that had never been heard by anyone else other than the band. The band also brought in a football helmet signed by the San Francisco 49ers and an autograph album by Journey, but they played the song for Kenny, and apparently Steve Perry and Jonathan Cain, like Steve Perry had to leave the room because he was so emotional about the whole thing. Kenny died the next day.
Kenny died the next day.
He died the next day with the Walkman still in his hand. This moment, this song, and this whole experience had a really big effect on the band. Not permanently, you know, because they all went back to kind of being jerks after that. But in the meantime, like, you know, they kind of reevaluated they had tension throughout the band, and this kind of calm those tensions down because they're like, what's the point, you know? It's such an emotional thing if you think about it, because the song is so beautiful. I think it's one of their best songs they've ever done. Definitely better than Don't Stop Believing. I really do. I think, you know, as far as lyrics are concerned. And then when I heard that story, it got me emotional. I was just like, man, I can only imagine how intense this must have been. So there you go.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful story. Did you say his name was Kenny Cykluk?
Yeah, Cykluk.
Cykluk?
The spelling's S-Y-K-A-L-U-K. Cykluk? Cykluk?
I don't know. Wow, that is a crazy story.
I'm probably mispronouncing his name. I apologize if I am.
You know? No, I mean, don't apologize to me. apologize to Kenny. Kenny's family. No, that's a beautiful story. I think, you know, I would agree about Only the Young being a better song, but I also think that Don't Stop Believing has suffered from a really overexposed, you know, being used in everything. And
I still love that song, but yeah, it's overexposed.
But it's like when you can't avoid it, you're like, oh, now they're using it in Glee. It's just like, ugh, you know, like you can't, like it's just used at Sopranos.
Right.
It's just such a part of the, you know, I hate this word, zeitgeist. But Only the Young is a wonderful, like, launching pad to Loud and Swain. I'll also say I feel like it's overused. Bookending would be fine. I feel like they use it one time in the middle of the movie, and I'm like, nope. You're wasting it. It's too much.
They do. They use like a, and then it goes into like a more of an instrumental version, which is pretty cool. But still, it is a little bit overused.
Well, I'm like, give me it at the credits in the beginning, give me it at the credits at the end. That makes sense to me, you know, and just kind of, especially this rewatch, I was like, it's just too much. I also feel, you know, we're going to talk about Crazy for You. That too is just like, how many times can we use this music cue? It's like anytime there's, you know, it becomes the love theme. It becomes,
yeah,
like anytime there's a Carla scene, it's like, I feel like there's a little Crazy for You being underscored.
Right. Well, and this movie came out in February of 85, and Crazy for You became the number one song in the country in May of 85. I mean, I feel like, I know we talked about this soundtrack extensively on our soundtrack episode, so maybe we don't have to hit every single song.
I mean, that was 5 years ago. I don't remember what we said, you know.
Yeah.
So
I'll just go through the songs.
I'm game, you know.
Let's go for it. I mean, there'll be some songs that we can be like, yeah, that was good, or that wasn't that great. I want to say John Waite's Change. That's the song that's played when he's doing the pegboard. I love that song. I love John Waite. John Waite will probably come up in another future episode next month because he's so good. I love his like anthem-esque type songs.
Right. Ain't Missing You at All. Ain't Missing You at All.
John Waite's so great.
Change. Yeah. It's a great song.
Do you like the way it's used in the movie?
I do. I mean, but I think... You know, I think it could be used at any point in the movie. Like, there's so many moments. I mean, it's probably used in the best way possible, but, you know, this kind of, it had to be edited so that, you know, it couldn't just be like Loudon climbs the peg wall, gets down off the peg wall, and then they have some conversation, right? It's like, no, like we have to throw to the montage where he's now running again, or, you know, wherever he is. Do you remember when you got your lucky break? Like, that's, you know, that is a song with a great build.
Yeah.
That really kind of takes you places when those drums kick in. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
Style Council, shout to the top, shout to the top.
That's one of the songs where, you know, for the longest time I had created my own lyrics to that because I didn't know what he was saying. And then, you know, you revisit the lyrics now and you're like, oh, that's what he's saying. I was half in mind, I was half in need, and as the rain came down, I dropped to my knees and I prayed. Sure. I said, sure. Oh, heavenly thing, please cleanse my soul. I've seen all on offer and I'm not impressed at all.
Oh,
it's
deep.
But this sort of bridge, this, you know, you see, it's a frightening thing when it dawns upon you that I know as much as the day I was born. And though I wasn't asked, I might as well stay and promise myself each and every day. That when you're knocked on your back and your life's a flop, and when you're down on the bottom, there's nothing else but to shout to the top. It's a frightening thing when it dawns upon you. When it dawns upon you.
I like that.
Yeah.
Song is 10 times better when you actually listen to the lyrics.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot going on in the lyrics.
Serious.
But I, yeah, no, I know. I know, but I just never knew what he was saying. And
wow. All I heard was, shout to the top.
Yeah.
I like the Style Council, by the way, who's an offshoot of the Jam.
Yes.
So there you go. Madonna is in the movie. Yeah, she's featured performing her two songs, Gambler. Gambler's a fine song. It's a fine pop song. It's okay.
It's not good. I mean, it's not.
It's like a throwaway song.
It's like if you were saw Madonna in concert and she was singing the Gambler, you'd be like, oh, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, Gambler.
Why is she singing that?
There's only one person I associate with that when I hear Gambler, and it's Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. As it should be.
But it's used in the club. I'm like, okay, if I was in a club and I heard the band doing that, I'd be like, yeah, okay, she's cool. It is cool to see Madonna in a movie, though, not just being Madonna, you know, being a rock star, like not being trying to be bigger than that or anything more.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like it's that's the nostalgia bug for me where I'm like, that's Madonna before she became such a big deal.
It's Madonna.
She's on the Zoom is not a good song in my opinion by Don Henley, and it's used in such a lame way in the movie. It's on the road trip when Loudon's with Carla and he's like, I like to listen to music in the when I'm on a road trip or whatever, and he puts that song in. I'm like, that's the song you chose? You're with this girl you got a huge crush on. You're about to put a song on. This is the first song you're going to play for her. This is going to set the precedent. No wonder she looks at you like a stepbrother, which she calls him that at one point.
I mean, I hate this song so much. You know, I muted it. I muted that scene.
You did?
Yes. I was like, she's on the mute. And then I waited and I was like, okay, they're talking again. And I unmuted. Yeah. It's... you know, she went on all the cattle calls, just like all the other girls, and waited by the phone with her rollers and her curls. It's like, it's so rhymey. It's so like,
it's so stupid.
It's so dumb. And
I'm not a fan. I'm not a huge fan of Don Henley anyways.
I am a fan of Don Henley, but I just think like this song does not, what is it? What does that mean? She's on the, like, what is it? I don't care to find out. You know, I don't care.
You could remake that song now and it would have a whole other meaning.
I don't care. It's like the...
and you still wouldn't care.
The Dirty Laundry song, like, kick them when they're up, kick them when they're down. I don't like that song.
Oh, God.
You know, but I could do some Boys of Summer, man.
Boys of Summer I love, but to me, like, he's got enough songs where, God, when he was in with the Eagles and he was so whiny, you know? I'm like, no.
Yeah, I don't.
Boys of Summer, I'll always love. It's one of my favorite 80s songs of all time. But
you know, was the Heart of the Matter or the
Heart of the Matter? No.
End of the Innocence.
And no. What's that mean?
Is that also an Enigma song? Return to Innocence. Okay.
Yeah.
Dimwa. Okay. That's so then, part one.
Then we go part two on the soundtrack. By the way, these songs, the way they're ordered on the soundtrack is clearly different from the way they're featured in the film. That always kind of bugged me. I always wished, and when we'll get to the Transformers, the movie, and when we talk about that soundtrack down the road, I have a problem with order on soundtracks. I think they should flow kind of into each other. These songs don't necessarily flow into each other because the next song is Hungry for Heaven by Dio. It's just a heavy, hard metal song. It's when they get on the bus to go on their, you know, it's when the team goes on to a meet. It's a cool metal song, but it's, you know, nothing to go gaga over.
No, you know what it is? It's like the drums and the drums and the guitar.
Yeah.
But the lyrics of this too, it's like, you're a dancer, but you're dancing on air.
I mean, I get it. They're limited on what they can put on a soundtrack, but put Last in Line on there, you know, Holy Diver. Those are some Dio bangers right there, but yeah.
Dio has rocked for a long time.
Long, long time. Yeah. But it's time to pass the torch. Yeah. And then we go into Lunatic Fringe, which obviously we talked about. And then I'll Fall in Love Again by Sammy Hagar, which is featured in the lunchroom scene when Loudon's sitting by himself, when you kind of get the sense that, yeah, this kid doesn't sit with his team. He's distancing himself. I love this song by Sammy Hagar.
And then they announce at lunch, Loudon has only told Cooch and Coach, Cooch and Coach,
yeah,
and Elmo, that he's on this vision quest to wrestle at 168. And then they make an announcement over the PA system, which is funny because, you know, the announcement comes over and then no one reacts in any kind of way other than his teammates. You know, and Otto's like, what's your fucking problem, man? And he's like, very casually, he's like, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even, you know, I didn't even, didn't consider the team. You know, he's backpedaling. He's going to take his little milk. And he's going to walk in the hallway. Yeah, but the song, right. So the song.
Well, the song is referenced on the over the PA as well. They're like, I'll Fall in Love Again by Sammy
Hagar. Sammy Hagar, right. Yes. yeah. You know, good song. Certainly better than She's on the Zoom.
Did you know that Sammy Hagar co-wrote some of Rick Springfield's songs off the Working Class Dog album?
I certainly didn't.
So if you listen to I'll Fall in Love, if you listen to some of that early Sammy Hagar, it sounds very similar to Rick Springfield at the same time because they were working together.
Because he was just writing in that style.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, but I equally love both those guys. So,
do you? Then, if you had to Sophie's choice them, who would you?
Oh, Rick Springfield.
Yeah. Bye bye, Sammy Hagar.
Yeah. I really.
Sayonara.
Yeah. But I will say,
Cabo Wabo.
If anyone's interested in reading biography, rock biography.
Oh God, you already said reading. Everybody checked out. Reading.
Well, I'm sure there's an audio version of it too. Sammy Hagar's autobiography is amazing.
Mm.
His story of how he got to where he is in life, it's inspirational. If whether you like the guy's music or not, you read and you're like, wait, whoa, what? It is wild. I highly recommend, I think it's called Red Rocker or something like that. Anyways, yeah, he took his first paycheck and he invested into like sprinkler systems. His first big music paycheck. It ended up being the sprinklers, like the largest sprinkler system company in the country. So he made a fortune off that. Then he invested in the first mountain bike, which was called the Red Rocker, and made a fortune off that. You know, he lived in a shithole in Fontana in Southern California. Probably would have wound up in prison if it wasn't for basically someone like thinking he was a nice guy. I highly recommend you check out the story.
Okay. Zach gets a commission for everyone that reads the audiobook. So
yeah, I sure do.
Use this code. Thank you, Sammy Hagar, for being a sponsor of the show.
can we just skirt over the fact that like Hot Blooded by Foreigner, it's a top 40 song.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I'm surprised it actually wound up on the soundtrack. Yeah. It's such a well-known song. And then, of course, at the end, Crazy For You by Madonna.
Yeah.
It's a 40-minute soundtrack, by the way. It's a 40-minute soundtrack. It's pretty tight.
It's much better than 16 Candles and their Happy Meal.
Yeah.
Happy Meal soundtrack.
It's not even a Happy Meal, dude. It's like you got the Happy Meal, but there was no prize.
There's
inside.
No toy. There's yeah. No prize.
Right.
I'm still thinking about it.
Three fun facts from 85. Can I throw them at you?
Throw them.
So the first CD was released in 1984. It was the Born in the USA, first CD released in 1984. Kind of mind-blowing to me. I'm like, wow, the CDs existed in 1984? That's crazy. But the first CD to sell a million copies was released in May of 85. This episode's dropping in May of 85. That's why we're talking about May of 85. Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms was released in 1985 and was the first CD to sell a million copies.
Yeah. You're telling me that Born in the USA was the very first CD to be printed?
In the U.S.
And it didn't sell a million copies?
No. Because I don't think people had CD players back.
Oh, right. Mean, you know? So how are they going to do it?
But this was the first one to sell a million.
So people didn't have CD players in 84, but they had them in 85?
Well, I'm sure they did, but maybe it was one of those things where, like, it wasn't as pop. It was probably, if it was the first one, people were probably like, I don't know about this new technology.
I don't know about these disc things. Huh. It's pretty wild, man.
Yeah. I thought you'd appreciate that. Are you a fan of that album, Brothers in Arms?
Yeah, I'm a Dire Straits fan. Well, I guess I feel like Dire Straits, you know, has like some really great songs. And then, we sort of talked about this. Like, and then I'm just like, I could really do without these songs. But
I think we talked about that with Corey.
Yeah, and Corey's like, what's Dire Straits? I don't know.
No, he loves Dire Straits.
I've never heard.
He actually loves Dire Straits.
Dire Straits. Like, what? Corey, no, it's Dire Straits. It's pronounced Diarrhea Straits. Like, what are you talking about? No, I don't believe that Corey loves Dire Straits. And if he does, it's because you made him watch a movie with it for Podcast After Dark last week or something. Because our boy don't like music. He don't like music. It's okay, Corey. It's nothing personal. It's just somehow you just weren't near a radio for
it's
your entire
science.
Childhood.
Right?
You never went anywhere, I guess, and never heard music. Okay, please continue.
Two other things. Michael Jordan was named Rookie of the Year in May of 1985.
First award honors the new kid on the block, the NBA Rookie of the Year. This season saw a number of brilliant rookies enter the NBA. But one player in particular captured the imagination and attention of fans throughout the country. His high-flying acrobatics and infectious enthusiasm helped lead his team into the playoffs for the first time in 4 years, and was one of the major reasons that nearly doubled the Chicago Bulls' attendance. And from the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan.
On behalf of Miller Brewing Association, I'm very happy to receive the award, although, team and other rookies in the league that just the same won the award as I have. I think my year was very, very experimental for me. I'm very happy that I achieved so much, and hopefully next year be more promising. If not, then maybe I retire after 2 years. Thanks a lot very much.
Michael Jordan plays exciting high-flying forward in the great NBA tradition of Elgin Baylor and Julius Irving.
That's one of the few guys that I would pay to watch play, because he is so talented and so much fun to watch. And if they can get a couple more just good players with him, they'll be championship contenders.
Okay, nice.
Started it all, everybody.
Nice, yep.
And the last thing, I thought this was like, this made me kind of...
horny.
I don't know. Remember, it made me think fondly on this time, but Nicholas Colasanto. Does that name sound familiar to you?
Nicholas Colonoscopy. How do you feel about that name?
Nicholas Colasanto. Sound familiar?
Yes, he created the first yo-yo.
How dare you? He played Coach on Cheers.
Oh.
And in May of 85,
Woody Harrelson killed him.
He made his final appearance as Coach Ernie Pantuso on Cheers. He was, of course, not replaced, but after his death, Woody Harrelson would join the cast and replace him as Woody Boyd, beginning in the fourth season later that year.
Way to bring it down.
I mean, I the minute I read that, I thought of Craig Safin's music cues from that he did all the bumpers, right? Mm-hmm. And I just thought of that music cue playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of cool. I don't know. This was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
At the same big year, by the way, deal. The same month, only a couple days later, Dolph Sweet made his final appearance as Chief Carl Kaniski on Give Me a Break. Two old grizzled white guys.
Mm.
So there you go.
More bad news. All right.
He didn't die. He just made his final appearance.
Okay.
So that's 1985. That's Vision Quest. That's its epic soundtrack. We got an interview with Raphael Sabarge coming up next week. Then we've got 80s Kids Unite. We've got Territory Marks. We got a double dose of Territory Marks. We got a mini-sode and an interview. So lots going on.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's wrestling.
You've been busy.
Yeah, so really quickly, Territory Marks, instead of doing two matches per episode, we're just doing one match per episode, tagged onto an interview that we have later on, soon after that. So if we have an interview for the month, we're going to do a mini-sode and an interview. If we don't have an interview for the month, we'll just do a proper episode. For all you listeners out there who want to support the show in a very awesome way, go to patreon.com/$2 late fee. And if you sign up to our Patreon, you'll automatically be enrolled in like our monthly trivia. You could be a contest. We could play for you on our monthly trivia with prizes. Last month we had a prize winner. The month before that, we've been doing this consistently now for a while. Tales from Video Store is on there. You can get a mix CD from us every 6 months. We've got quite a few at that level, and it's a great way to support the show. So patreon.com/$2 late fee. Last thing I'll say about that is the mix CD features songs that we've featured on the show. So will Vision Quest songs pop up? Yes, they will down the road.
Yeah, it's really great. All the mix CDs, really good. All right, well, it's been way over 6 minutes, but it's not what happens in those way over 6 minutes. I mean, it's not the fact that it was. No, I've already messed it up. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys.
Try again. Well, if you want that quote, go to if you know, you know. IYKYTs. Is it IYKYTs?
It's IYKYTs. YKTs.
Go to that website. Links are in the show notes.
If you know, you know, tees.com. Go to the site, and as a reminder, use the code $2VISION. That's $2VISION with a capital V. Enter that code and get 15% off the shirt. Go to it. All right, guys. May you all be successful on your own personal vision quests. And as always, reach for the stars. Hit the roof, maybe.
I need the 6 minutes. It's what happens in that 6 minutes.
People talking, and they're saying that you're leaving. So unhappy with the way that you've been living.
Listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four... Is it five-star rating? Don't forget to subscribe and give us a five-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2latefee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.